This episode is brought to you by Heidy. Imagine kicking back while a HIPAA-compliant AI scribe writes your soap notes for free. Yes, you heard us right. Heidy is free. I'm Dr. Tom, Heidi's CEO and founder, and we started Heidy to stop clinicians wasting their life on clinical documentation. Heidy transforms your consult babble into crisp, clear soap notes, personalizing itself with every edit. One day, Heidy will be your AI resident, looking through research, explaining plans, and doing anything you don't want to. If you currently pay for an AI scribe in your practice, you should swap to Heidy. We'll even credit you for anything you've already paid. Dive into the description for the link and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town. Sign up and watch Heidy work its magic, all for free, because you've got better things to do.
If we're more likely to utilize a short-term disability insurance than long-term, why is it more important to get the long-term disability insurance? Is it ever too late to get long-term disability? And what about life insurance? Stay tuned and find out more. Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, we have a sponsored episode. We have Holton Jones, who's a sales advisor for Pattern. Pattern Life is actually the name of the company, although they do life and disability insurance. So we're going to be talking about all of that. So Holton is, there are three things that he holds near and dear to his heart. That's his family, staying active, which I love here, and the Buckeyes, okay? His ability to balance his professional commitment of ensuring physicians get disability insurance coverage that they need and personal fulfillment of helping those around him grow make him a value member of the Pattern team and why they chose him to represent the company today. Personally, he's worked with over 1,000 physicians, or thousands rather, of physicians through Pattern, and Pattern's been working in this space for 11 years. So Holton, thank you so much for being on the show.
Love it. I'm glad to be here.
So the first thing I want to talk about is short-term disability insurance, because this is actually the second time I've had someone from Pattern on the show. And the answer to that question actually changed the way I even think about insurance. So that's why I want to get that off the bat. And I used to have short-term disability insurance. And the reason was because you're much more likely to collect on short-term disability insurance than long-term. But given that, you usually don't recommend short-term disability. And so why is that?
Yeah, correct. Typically, the reason that I don't advise short-term disability is just because the financial cost that it takes for you to spend a premium on that every, you know, so often is not going to be something that's maybe necessary for most people, because it's only going to be protecting you for a set of time that you could probably protect yourself. And so the insurance kind of term for that would just be to self-insure. And if you can self-insure anything, then you don't have to spend money to insure it, then that's going to save you money in the long run. Although, yeah, it's easier to get a claim in a short-term policy. Do you need that to be covered at all, right?
Because ultimately you're spending money for them to be the intermediary in the chance. Like, it's a insurance is just like a calculated gamble, and they know the numbers. And so why would you pay for that when you can just do it yourself at no cost? Or rather, just you can't, you know, you shouldn't invest that money. You should be having it in like a safe place so that you can insure yourself for 3 months, 6 months. What is the length of time where something would change from short-term to long-term disability?
Depends on the two policies, right? So your long-term disability policy will have an elimination period or a waiting period, depending on the company who's holding it. And that is how long you would have to wait until it kicks in. So if you have a short-term disability policy, you'll want it to kind of be in that gap. So some people, if you do really believe in short-term, then maybe you could do a longer elimination period on your long-term. Otherwise, maybe do a shorter elimination period and just self-insure for that time. So what I typically advise is to do no short-term disability and a 90-day elimination period so that you can just cover those 3 months if something happened.
Got it. And so is that the shortest period you'll typically get as your elimination period for long-term disability?
That's the shortest I've ever done. Companies offer shorter, but they're really expensive.
You're going to pay for it. Yeah, there's like a diminishing returns there. So there, that's where it makes sense to insure yourself for that time period. Okay, so to that idea, we should be self-insuring anything that we can insure. Like life insurance, if we have enough in savings to, like for people that are in like the FIRE movement, right? And they're financially independent, they don't need to work anymore. You have enough savings to retire on. You don't need life insurance, taking into account, you know, all the expenses.
even when you're applying for an insurance product, they're going to ask you about what you have stored away. If you're a trust fund baby, you don't need life insurance and disability insurance. Like, you know, you already have those funds covered in some way. You don't need to spend the premium to cover if your income is not going to be that important to you. Most people, their income is pretty important to their lifestyle, right? And that's why these things exist, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So now let's talk about disability insurance, right? So what does the process look like for getting disability insurance?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ways that you can go about it. I mean, as broad as you can possibly get, you need to select a company that's going to hold the insurance policy for you. And then you need to apply and get that policy underwritten for you, which is going to be the company's process to look into your medical history, your financial history, and kind of offer you a policy that you could, that can then negotiate and either accept or decline. So depending on how you want to go about that, it can look a lot of different ways. So you can go online, you can get quotes online from anywhere, right? And just kind of see what's out there and kind of apply that way. You can talk to the company directly and an agent that is works for the insurance company directly. Or what Pattern does and many others like us, you know, we're a broker. So what we do is we go out and we shop prices and help you kind of navigate different options and how they're going to handle your specific case to try and help more on the front end before you get an offer. Kind of know what that offer is going to be so that once you get it, we can help negotiate, you know, some of those details if there's any potential to get something better than maybe what the insurance company gives back from that process.
So you had said in the pre-interview that we should be talking about some of the lingo. And there was a word that you used that I don't totally understand, even though I hear it all the time, the underwriter. So there's the broker, there's the insurance company, and then there's the underwriter. Is the underwriter the one that like has the money?
No. So the underwriter is a person who works for the insurance company. So the insurance company is always going to separate out claims and underwriting. And their processes are going to be totally different. This is how the insurance company is going to protect themselves from, you know, a salesperson from the insurance company wanting really badly to make a sale on a product. The underwriter doesn't have any actual communication with the client.
No skin in the game. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And they're going to make a decision on what the company should protect or what that policy is going to look like.
Got it. Because we have a short-term rental property, just quick advertisement for me. Check out Wolf Hill Acres on Instagram. And, you know, the insurance company was like the underwriter this, the underwriter that, talking about this third person. And I like didn't quite understand who that was. And it's the, okay, now it makes sense. So you can separate those two things and therefore you don't have the conflict of interest. Got it.
Exactly. Because the salesperson for the insurance company is going to be like, we want to do whatever it takes to get your business. But the underwriter is there designed to protect the insurance company so that they don't get into a bad deal.
Unnecessary risks. So what are the price points that we're talking about for getting disability insurance? And that's a very broad question.
Yeah, it can vary drastically. Obviously, if you're in any sort of training program, residency, fellowship, you have big discounts that are almost always associated with that. That's where you hear a lot of big push to get disability insurance while you're still in a training program. If you're outside of that, then your put costs are going to go up, not only for the fact that you're probably insuring more income at that time, but because you're losing those discounts, right? So we typically say males, it's somewhere between 1% and 3% of your income, females, 2 to 4. Females will pay more for disability insurance. Pretty much all unisex policy prices are out the window up till now. So yeah, that's typically kind of what we say for
all unisex prices are out the window. So like it's not a thing anymore?
Yeah. So the insurance companies tried to get competitive and they created unisex prices and made male prices a little more expensive, female prices a little less expensive. It ended up just not working out very well. So they all worked really hard to get those kind of redone. And starting, it was the April 2023 when the last ones kind of left.
So probably all the men went for the male pricing and all the women went for the unisex pricing. So then you didn't have the men in there too. Women have like pregnancy complications and things, but men are idiots. And I feel like are more likely to get hurt doing stupid things. Like I can say that as a man who does stupid things.
I mean, the logic would totally back that, right? I mean, ultimately, it's always going to come down to actuary data, right? I mean, insurance companies are giant calculators, walk around. They know exactly what the risk is for every individual person and their medical history and all of that. And so somewhere in there, they can show that, you know, females use disability policies more often. Men pay more for life insurance, though. So if you're in that space, you'll kind of equal out. So,
yeah. Right, because men don't live as long, which is why I thought they would collect more frequently on disability. But, you know, they know the data. Okay. Is it ever too late to get disability insurance?
I would kind of go back to your short-term disability policy question. I mean, if you're so far into your career and you have enough into savings that if you became disabled, you would just retire early and financially you could take that on, then there's no need to look into getting disability insurance. If you're not in that place, which is ultimately something that you can only answer to yourself, then you probably need to look into it. Now, if you're already past retirement age, like past age 65, Social Security benefits kicking in.
No, I mean, like, because they're like early career physicians, right? You're either just finished your training, you know, you're about to finish training, you just finished training, you're pretty young, you're pretty healthy, right? Well, I'm in my 40s, a little worse for wear, had some injuries or whatever, you know, got some arthritis, whatever. So at what point, but I haven't saved, you know, enough to retire, I'm in my 40s. So like mid-career, not late career, but mid-career. For those of us who are like, crap, after hearing all this about disability insurance, now it's making me creak in my boots, because if I get struck with an illness where I really can't work at all for my family, I'm the sole earner in my family, and I need something, what do I do?
Yeah, I would definitely advise looking into it. There's a lot of ways that you can change the structure. So, you know, there are things that I advise a 28-year-old resident that I wouldn't advise for a 40-year-old attending physician, right? So the way you structure that, you can save yourself a good amount of money. Actually, there's a health system that we're working with right now, and large portion of their physicians, they're taking them off of W-2, putting them on 1099. So they're all losing employer coverage. And so we're working with a lot of them to try and figure out what that's going to look like for them, because most of them are uninsured now, you know. And so there's been a lot of conversations, and we've been able to kind of sit down and look at, okay, well, what of these features are going to be the most important for you in this stage of your career, but you probably need some sort of protection.
Yeah. Well, I mean, personally for me, the way I've kind of processed disability insurance, the way that it would make the most sense to me, because there are a lot of people who get injured who can continue working, right? They can continue working, but there are some injuries that you get where you just cannot. You cannot. You know, there's got to be a way to mix a group policy with an individual policy so that you're really covered in both situations, right? Like your group policy might not kick in until you're really completely disabled and can't work at all, but your individual can compensate for the loss of income for, like, let's say you were a super successful surgeon, right? And then you're injured, can't do that anymore, but you can work for a healthcare organization in another way, right? Not earning what you were before, but still getting something. So you need something to close that gap. And that's where the individual policy comes in, you know, like a way to mix the two together. That's at least the way it's made the most sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a cost perspective, that's always going to make the most sense. Now, I will say, you know, no, like your private insurance policy is not going to double insure the income that your employer is also covering. So this is a little in the weeds, but let's kind of get into, like, okay, so if you had an individual policy covering, let's say, $5,000 of income, and your employer was covering about $5,000 of income, and then something happened where you couldn't do surgeries anymore, but you could continue to work at the, you know, health institution in some other way. Well, only the $5,000 of the maximum amount that your private policy would be covering would pay out anything. So if you lost 50% of your income because you couldn't do surgeries anymore, you would only get 50% of that private portion and none of the employer's portion, even though that's not 50% of your actual income, correct? So like you would only be getting a quarter of your income, even though you lost 50% of it. And so that's where you have to be careful with doubling up with a private policy and an employer's coverage. Now, again, employer's policies are always going to be way cheaper on premium. So just kind of making sure that you know the details of that when you're making that decision is where it's going to be important.
So what's the difference between like expanding on a current policy? So let's say you were wise enough to get something in residency, but now you need to scale up. Let's say there's like an injury that's occurred between when you've gotten it and when you need to scale up versus getting a new one now that you have this condition.
Yeah, I meet with physicians. Yeah, absolutely. I meet with physicians all the time who are like, hey, you know, I got a policy when I was in residency, you know, but I think I need more. Can you help me? And I'm like, I mean, maybe, but more than likely you need to go back to your original agent and you need to increase the existing policy.
In the world of medicine, where every decision can change lives, your peace of mind is crucial. This is where Pattern steps in. Imagine insurance made simple, fast, and personalized just for you. With Pattern, you're not just getting disability and life insurance, you're ensuring your future and protecting your greatest asset, your income. In the past 10 years, Patent has transformed the way over 20,000 doctors secure their financial well-being. Discover the simplicity of securing your future at patternlife.com or click the link in the description. But what I'm saying is increase the existing policy now that you have like a condition, right? Versus buying a new policy now that you have a condition, right? What's the difference between the two?
So there's a lot. I mean, so on the condition piece specifically, you're going to be looking at having hopefully an increased rider on that policy. If your original agent did a good job of setting that up, you have some sort of protection there where you can increase your existing coverage without going through a medical check at all. And none of those new conditions can be held against you in any way. All your future income is guaranteed to be insurable to you. Yeah, not to mention the fact that if there's a discount that you got when you were in residency, that will be carried over on increasing the existing policy and you wouldn't qualify on getting a new one. Like, it's almost always in your best interest to increase or adjust your existing policy and then get a new one. You're older now, you're more unhealthy. There's so many conditions or certain situations that cause that to be probably less desirable.
Were you talking to me directly? Does it show on the camera that I'm older and unhealthier? I think so.
I would say that directly. But I didn't see you when you were in residency. Who knows? You could have been thriving back then.
Yeah.
Was that how you would describe yourself when you were in residency, right?
One of my co-residents would say to me, I can always tell when you're in a hard rotation because the skinny dork that I know is hiding under there starts coming out. You know, like my temples would get would atrophy. So I didn't look great in residency for different reasons.
Yeah, well, and we'll see those rotations all the time on our end where I'll be working with someone and they're communicating so well. And then it's like a month long, just like ghosting. Like, I don't even know where this person is. And then they come back and they're like, hey, are we still doing this? I'm like, I'm still here. I don't know about you.
My life hasn't changed very much, but you seem to have disappeared. Yeah. So let's go back to that lingo question, okay? Because you know, you've used the word like rider. You know, what are the other terms that we need to familiarize ourselves with?
Yeah, I mean, so rider is going to be a really generic term. So any kind of alteration to a base disability policy is going to be done so by adding a rider to the policy. So depending on the company you're working with, they might have a base disability policy and then give you an own occupation rider to cover you for the way that you're hoping to be covered, right? Or there's an increase rider on the policy. So it's a specific kind of rider that's set up. There's a couple different options for you, and that will allow you to increase the when you're later on in your career, even if you have medical concerns. There's, you know, going to be partial disability riders that will help in the instance, like you were saying, you can still work, but you can't do everything that you were doing, but there's an income loss there. That's a rider that you need to make sure is added. Cost of living rider, catastrophic rider, family benefit riders. I mean, there's so many different riders that you can add on, and you just need to make sure that you're doing the ones that you need and seeing what the cost is. Some of them are free. So you just need to see what the cost is going to be and what's the most valuable for you.
So is like a cost of living adjustment, is that the same as like an inflation adjustment? Are these two different things? Or is that, did I just make up an inflation adjustment? That's not even a thing.
So it kind of depends. Again, there's so many different lingos depending on the company that you go with. Most of the companies will give you an inflation adjustment to the amount that you're covered for in the first few years of your policy. So you get a policy for $10,000 of coverage, and the first couple years, every anniversary, they're going to increase it based on inflation so that your coverage is growing. Now, as your coverage grows, your premium is going to grow. So that's something you have to keep in mind if you have that coverage. Now, that's different than a cost of living adjustment. Cost of living adjustment is a rider that you're paying for that only increases the payout if you're on disability claim. And so when you're on disability claim, you're not paying any premium. And so if I'm receiving the $10,000 because I'm no longer working, then that is going to continue to go up with inflation every year due to the cost of living adjustment rider.
Got it. So I've like, let's say I've insured myself for, and I'm just going to use a simple number, like $5,000 a month, right? We're not going to take into account any of the complexities or nuances, but $5,000 a month. So I can either have like kind of a cost of living adjustment that goes up 5% per 3 years or something. And so my premiums also go up 5%. But what you're talking about, this other thing, is that like it's only it's $5,000 a month indefinitely unless I start collecting. And then once I start collecting, then it goes up as the cost of living or inflation increases.
Correct. Exactly. And most of the policies I issue have both, because you don't ever have to take inflation enhancements on those anniversaries if you don't want them. There's actually, so Principal is a really major disability insurance policy company for physicians, and their new policy structure, depending on what state you're in, they have it to where that inflation enhancement, you know, there's less flexibility on what you accept or don't accept. So there's a chance that you might have to take that in order to get some of the additional features that you want. So depending on the details of where you're at that time, you know, those things might not be as flexible or as much of options for you. But, you know, that's the purpose of sitting down and looking at everything.
Okay. So is that the difference between fixed cost and graduated cost? Is that what we just talked about?
No. Yeah, okay. Totally different. So the insurance lingo for that is going to be a level premium versus a graded premium. Okay. So a graded premium is going to increase. It's going to cut your costs up front. And then every year, your policy is going to grow. Nothing is going to be changing in the coverage itself. If nothing else changes, it's the exact same. Your premium is still going to grow every year. I typically advise against them, because a lot of times you end up paying way more into the insurance policy if you have a graded premium than if you went level from the beginning. Now, I do have some clients who decided to go graded. They were really confident that they were going to be in a situation where they were going to be able to cancel their policy really early and save some money holistically on that coverage. The difficulty with that, in my opinion, is that you get insurance for the unknown. And if an unknown situation happens and you're in a graded premium policy and you're not able to cancel that policy as early as you thought you were, you could get yourself into a really sticky situation where that premium's growing drastically and you can't cancel. You really need the coverage, but it's costing you a ton, and that can just be a really difficult place to be. So I always recommend level. It's way cleaner, way safer. If you do get a graded premium, you are able to transition it into a level premium at any time that you would want, and then you would just pay an additional level amount from there for what you kind of saved on the front end.
Are there any other clauses that we want to make sure that we maybe not have, but at least discuss with an agent?
As a physician, the number one thing that you're going to want to make sure you have is own occupation coverage, and making sure that you're diving deep, deep, deep into the definition of that and making sure that it is exactly what it says that it is, because there's a lot of different things that sound like it is the same, and it might not necessarily be the same. So sitting down with someone that you trust and making sure that you're really digging into how the policy is actually going to be protecting you, what isn't covered, and how those payouts are going to come is where I would say is going to be really important. But making sure that a true own occupation option is going to be there for you and that you're going to be covered if you can't do exactly what you were doing before.
Let's talk about life insurance, all right? Because the name of the company is Pattern Life, right? We'd be remiss not to talk about life insurance, because we actually haven't talked about it on the show, at least not anytime recently. How do we figure out how much we need?
So, every individual situation is going to be so different. I always say, in a very generic world, about 10 times your annual salary getting coverage to around the age of 65. That's always kind of my general recommendation. Obviously, if you're in two physician households, or if depending on all the details, things like that could change. But that's a kind of a big picture generalization.
Do you ever insure someone who is not an earning member of the household?
Yeah, I would, depending on some of the details. Even if you just think about, so we'll take like a very kind of traditional structure of a household, right? So if let's say
the wife is the major earner, right?
Sure.
Successful
orthopedic physician, surgeon,
and you got a stay-at-home
mom,
dad.
Yeah. Three kids. Yeah. Stay-at-home dad, mom of three kids. She's an orthopedic surgeon. She's the main breadwinner. Dad stays at home, doesn't work. So if something happened to the father and he wasn't there, you're going to have childcare costs now for however long. So there could be, a necessary amount of coverage even just in that. And that's just one facet of looking at, something that might be beneficial to cover someone who's not earning an income in the home.
Okay. Because we're looking to replace income, but we're looking to see how much it's going to cost us if in care, if that happens.
Absolutely. And people always go with life insurance. You know, it's natural to go to like funeral costs and debt costs and like, and those things are good to keep in mind as well, right? So that would definitely be important. But there are other things to keep in mind when making that decision, even if the person isn't earning an income that's contributing to the financial status of the household.
Okay. Okay. And then earlier we talked about getting disability insurance if we're like mid-career, right? What about life insurance? What does that look like?
Yeah, a lot of people will stack life. So life insurance, you know, when you get your policy and it lasts however long your term is, 20, 30 years, what I typically did is if I'm speaking to a resident, we'll get a smaller policy that will last the full 30 years. And then 5 to 7 years later, when they're starting to have kids and they're now in attending, we'll stack kind of a bigger policy on top of that for just like a 20-year or maybe a 15-year term, so that they can get their kids kind of through that season. And then you'll still have some of the original policy left over on the back end to cover things until retirement age. That's kind of how I would typically recommend to lay it out. So in that scenario, you know, there are kind of mid-career times that you might want to look at adding some life coverage. Obviously, medical underwriting is still going to be a thing. So you have to keep in mind if there's going to be medical things that come up that cause your prices to be higher than you're going to be willing to pay or something like that. But there could be merit.
Now, does it work like disability? Like if someone wanted to expand their life insurance, the policy that they already have, can they do that without the medical exam, or that only works for disability?
Only works for disability. So life insurance is going to be set for the term, right? So you're paying that set price for that, however long that term is. So you'd be applying for a new policy and just stacking it on top at any point in the future. Yeah.
Does it make sense to get life insurance as a resident when you really don't have much to spend on life insurance? Or should you just wait until, or you can get some like whatever reasonable amount you can afford and then just get another policy on top of that when you become an attending and can afford more?
Yeah, I would definitely, I wouldn't get your maximum amount of life coverage as a resident. Like how much you feel like you're going to need.
All of your income is going to be going towards insurance. You're not going to be having money for food. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not a lot of fun during residency at that time. So, you know, I would say I would still recommend getting something. Again, those longer term. So if you're going to get a 30-year term policy, the pricing on that is going to be so much cheaper while you're still younger and you don't have the medical risk, right? Hopefully you're in a situation where you don't have that medical risk. So getting it then is going to be cheaper. So then you have that policy all the way through to retirement. Again, that's kind of what I would recommend generically speaking. And even though it's going to be smaller. So, you know, if you get a $1 to $2 million policy when you're like in residency, maybe second year, third year, and then, you know, when you're an attending, kind of adding like a $3 to $5 million on top of that, depending on your income, so that you have that bulk of coverage while you have your dependents, while you're in the prime, just to make sure. But then you would still have kind of a tail end of that original policy after that portion.
Yeah, to cover you. Yes. That makes sense. The math checks out. Is there anything else that, as we're coming to a close here, that this was like a crash course in life insurance, but anything else that we didn't talk about you think bears mentioning for life insurance?
Yeah, I mean, life insurance is much simpler, a lot less nuance in the policy. I mean, even if you think about definitions, like you either pass away or you don't, right? So very black and white. Yeah. So disability has far more that you need to dig into. There's no discounts in life insurance for being a part of training programs. So there's just a lot less that even like myself is able to do in comparison to, you know, other people. Yeah. Obviously, anyone that you can sit down that you trust is going to be able to help you with it. Whereas I feel like with disability insurance, even if you're sitting down with someone you trust, if they don't really know physicians and how that works and how that coverage can work, like you could still get yourself in a sticky situation. So that's where things can be a little bit different with life insurance versus disability.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Do you get any benefit from getting your disability and life insurance from the same people, or really just the policy is the policy?
You might get a benefit of only having to remember one password if you're still remembering passwords. No, there's really no benefit, no discounts. There's, yeah, okay. No benefit really.
Just you can get it all in one sitting and then you don't need, you know, one. Is it, sure. Could it be one medical exam? Like, could you just have one exam that covers both of those things? Or not really, because you might be getting different policies from different people.
Sometimes you can swing it if you do apply at the same time using the same agent or broker. Sometimes you can get that to happen, but. Like they wouldn't say that.
Nominal benefit. Yeah. All right. Well, so if people want to check you out, if they, you and Pattern, where do they find you online?
Yeah. Patternlife.com. You know, all of our information's on there. You can submit quote requests on there and schedule with any advisor. Everything's free. You know, you never pay anything for insurance until you actually sign a policy and start paying premium at the end. So we're here to help any way that we can until then.
Fantastic. Well, Holton Jones, Pattern Life, thank you so much for your time and your expertise.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Doctors dedicate our lives to caring for others. It's time someone took care of us. Visit patternlife.com to simplify your path to peace of mind. Patternlife.com, simplifying your insurance journey. Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you, this is not a doctor-patient relationship and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.